connecting to the AOC Podcast Network. Enjoy your stay.
This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people, places, and culture of Lafayette, Louisiana, the gateway to South Louisiana and the region we know as Acadiana. Today's episode features Lynn Guidry, a well-known architect whose projects include downtown's Parc International and Parc Sans Souci, Karen Crow City Hall, the Lafayette City Hall Auditorium, our local Junior League building, and the Karen Crow Sports Complex. Lynn's also been an active participant in local politics, having served on the Karen Crow City Council from 1982 to 1987, and then on our Lafayette Parish Council from 1988 to 1996. He's developed a fascinating presentation on the history of Lafayette, which we'll discuss in a moment. Lynn met his future bride, Gail, at a St. Anthony Catholic Church event, and they were married in 1969. Gail's been an active participant in Lynn's architect business, managing his office affairs. Lynn, welcome to Discover Lafayette.
Thank you, Jan. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. I hope I've covered your past. Well, I want to get into it with you, but you're quite a guy.
That's about all of it. The rest of it we're going to have to make up. But no, that was really nice introduction.
Yeah.
As you mentioned, I'm an architect, and the influence started really a long time ago. Many people know that my brother was also an architect. My brother's deceased now, but my brother was 7 years older than I am. And when he was in college, I was fascinated by what he was doing, mm-hmm. the drawings and everything, and the tools, the T-square and all of those things influenced me. But really, both of us were influenced by our dad. Our dad was a builder, and he had a lumberyard. And to say that Larry and I grew up in the lumberyard is not an exaggeration. We grew up in the lumberyard. We played with wood. We worked with wood. We built things with wood. And so I think our dad was really the greatest influence on my life and on Larry's life. And it's been interesting to see all of that, how it's developed and how it's evolved. So I went to school at UL, or USL, as it was known at the time, graduated in 71. I got licensed in 75, and I started my own firm in 78. And so next year it'll be, 50 years of being in practice. 40 years. I'm going to do that math over again.
You look good for 50-year architect.
Yeah, thank you. 40 years of having my own firm. And during that time, I've done a lot of great projects, interesting projects, and some big, some small, you know. And at one point in my practice, I had a relatively large firm for Lafayette standards. I had about 15 people working with us. And more recently, I've downsized on purpose, mm-hmm. By design. So now it's just Gail and I, just the two of us. Our office is in Karen Crow. Mm-hmm. I do a lot of work in the Karen Crow area, but not just in Karen Crow. Currently, I have projects in Youngsville and Scott and Lafayette and, you know, in this whole area and actually in Opelousas. So stay fairly busy with, mm-hmm. with those things.
We actually met, I think, years ago. I didn't get to know you well, but Northwood United Methodist Church at Glory Switch and Moss was our church. You had designed that and then helped again the church burn down.
I did it twice. Yeah, we did. Yeah. I did it first in about 90, 92. Mm-hmm. And then, maybe about 6 or 7 years ago, the church burnt on Palm Sunday. And I was very fortunate. They called me back to see if I had mm-hmm. the drawings, and I did.
And they did it better the second time because they knew how to use the space better.
It was interesting. You know, I remember one of the committee meetings we had, and someone said, you know, you often say in life, if I could do this over again, I would do it different. Well, that person said, we have that opportunity now.
Right.
And so that's how the church looked at it. It was an opportunity to improve on what mm-hmm. they had done in the 90s, and we did. I think the second building that we did for Northwood was actually much better than the first building we did. But yeah, that's been an interesting relationship that I've had with them.
Well, the downtown projects you've worked on, Lynn, those are really iconic and they're a draw for locals and tourists alike.
Yeah,
can you talk about that some?
There's actually three parks that we worked on. We did, you know, Park International, which is a big stage that you most people see during Festival International and that. We did the Parc Sanssouci, which is used a lot and completely transformed that property. It was kind of blighted, you know, before we did the project. And then we also did a park right across from the federal courthouse that a lot of people don't recognize. It was actually a master plan, and it was supposed to go and may eventually go all the way to Buchanan Street, but someone else owns a property right now, so it hasn't been expanded. But, so there's three parks. And, they get really well utilized, especially during the festivals.
Oh, yeah.
But I think really on a day-to-day basis, they get used a lot. And they are kind of iconic, you know, especially Parc International with the big stage and the roof with the flags on it and that kind of thing. It's kind of a trademark for downtown Lafayette now.
My favorite scene is watching children in the water that comes up, the fountains. It's just such a draw for young families. Yeah. You know, it's fun.
Well, I have some relatives who are school teachers in the Vidrine area, and they bring their class each year to Lafayette to do a variety of things. And they tell me quite often how much the kids enjoy. You know, they go to the museum and they do those things. But then the best part of their day is to be able to run through that water and get wet and it's okay.
And cool off.
That has also become sort of an icon for downtown Lafayette as well.
So right.
Those have been fun projects.
What got you into politics as a young architect? Was that something you had dreamed of doing?
No, exactly that. I was looking for work. So I started going to a bunch of...
Free advertising.
Yeah, well, I was going to a lot of city council meetings, you know, see who might build the next fire station or city hall or whatever. And I probably went to all of the city council meetings in Karen Crow for about a four-year period. It turned out that one of the people serving on the council was not going to run again for whatever reasons. And I had watched and observed and thought, well, you know, maybe I'll try sitting on the other side of the table.
Yeah.
And so I did. And so I served on the city council in Karen Crow for about a term and a half, for 6 years. In the middle of that second term, I decided to run for the parish council, which was pre-consolidated government. It was the parish council. And so, again, I won and served on that body for 8 years, for two terms. And it was great, you know, great experience for me. I think it was great exposure for me as well as an architect. You know, got my name out there, my name recognition around town. You know, was and is very high because of that time serving in public office. I really have told a lot of people that everyone should run for public office at least one time.
I agree.
It's not, and I know you've had that experience. It's a great experience. It's not always a happy experience. You know, sometimes you don't win. You don't get the most votes, but still the experience. I think the learning experience, meeting people, finding out what other views are, and all of that. I think is very very. I look back at that as a great experience, the running for office. And serving in office was a great experience as well, but running for office was very valuable to me. It exposed me to a lot of things that I wasn't comfortable with before, made me grow up in a lot of ways.
You do have to learn to think on your feet. And also learn quickly the issues. I was amazed, and I'm sure when you were serving and when you were running for office, Lynn, that had been a time when Lafayette's oil and gas industry had a major downturn.
Yes.
So you were serving at a time of great transition for our local community.
Absolutely. When the oil bust came in the mid-80s, I was serving on the Karen Crow Council at the time, and that's about the time I decided to run for the parish council. And it was, you know, we've heard that expression about I'm leaving Lafayette, you know.
And I believe in Lafayette.
And then I believe in Lafayette, you know, it was the bumper stickers. But
yeah.
But yeah, so we, you know, there were a lot of people leaving Lafayette. I mean, of the architectural community, I would say clearly about half of the experienced, well-established architects at that time left Lafayette. You know, they were moving to Atlanta, to Charlotte. My business partner moved to Fort Myers, Florida. And you know, they did well over there, and most of them never moved back, you know, even after things got good here again. But they weren't moving to Houston because Houston was having the same problems that we were. And so serving on the council at that time, I mean, that was all parish council. And we hear today how little money the parish has through consolidated government. Well, it was just as true in those days. You know, we didn't have a lot of money to pave roads, to do drainage, to do a lot of the public improvements. But it was a little easier in those days because I think people understood that. You know, they
understood they had to pay for things.
But yeah, so there wasn't a lot of great expectations from us. And so every once in a while when we were able to do a road or a drainage, we were like heroes, you know. And of the parish council members at the time, there were seven of us. Well, four of them represented primarily Lafayette districts. And so they weren't trying to get their share of the money that was, assigned for drainage or roads or whatever. So it was really the three rural guys like myself who were trying to make it work and trying to use our money as well we could. And that was a wonderful experience for me. Serving was a great group of guys and gals. Mm-hmm. Walter Como was our parish president at the time. You know, it's strange, when I first got on the council, I don't remember the exact issue, but there was an issue where Walter sued the council because we took a position where he didn't think it was correct, and so he sued us. And so there was, I won't say that we didn't like each other, but we certainly weren't going to have lunch with each other either. You know, it was a little turmoil between the council and Walter. To his credit, over the next 8 years, we became best friends. We became very, very good friends. And I credit him to being a very good leader, very much like Tommy Angel was when I served on the council in Cairncrow, and Glenn Brasso is in Cairncrow now. All of those men had the philosophy about, you know, during the council meetings, we may not agree. We may even fuss. We may argue with each other. But after the council meetings, we're friends.
Yeah, it's
and
not
we're going to go out and,
you
know, drink a Coke or drink a beer or whatever. And we put that aside.
Right.
And all three of those men worked that way, and it was a pleasure working with all of them.
I'm glad you brought up Glenn Brasso. He's one of my personal favorite leaders in our community, mayor of Cairncrow.
Great guy.
Currently.
Yeah, you know, at the end of this term, he will have been in public office for 40 and a half years.
That's amazing. 40.
And then that doesn't count the time that he served as a volunteer fireman. And a dozen other things that he's done, you know. So great guy.
He's just a public servant.
Absolutely.
If you looked it up in the dictionary,
we're very fortunate to have him. You know.
Yeah. So you've seen Lynn in the transition back in the 80s and 90s, and then your work with Lafayette. And we're going to talk about your knowledge of the history of Lafayette's growth. But you've seen how Lafayette has realized it had to become more diversified and not dependent on the oil and gas industry. And so you've been present through all that, helping Lafayette build. With your architectural skills, but you've witnessed, I guess, somewhat of a transformation of our local community.
Yeah. You know, in my presentation, my timeline covers about 200 years. I'll be 69 years old next month. And so, I mean, I've been through about a third of those 200 years, which is a little bit scary, you know. I mean, so I've seen a lot. I've seen, you know, Lafayette grow from
a small
town to, you know, pretty significant metropolitan area. I've seen the university grow. I've seen the small towns like Cairncrow and Youngsville grow from really small towns to having being a player. You know, you can't, the parish can't ignore Youngsville and Broussard and Scott and Cairncrow and Dusson anymore. You know, we're players. And so it's been interesting to see the transition and having some small role in all of it and helping some of it happen. It's been great.
Well, let's talk about your presentation that you make at the beginning of the podcast. And again, we're talking with Lynn Guidry, a local architect and historian for Lafayette. We talked about your knowledge of the history of how Lafayette grew. And I've heard you make the presentation several times. You've given so much of your time to Leadership Lafayette. I'm sure you've spoken to Leadership Louisiana. You've spoken to different civic groups to help us understand how our community grew. And I guess as every community, we've got the proverbial railroad track. We've got growth that's taken place in one area of the parish more than the other. But what made you study our history and put that together? Was it a love through your architecture, or what prompted that?
Yes and no. I remember I was having lunch. As you know, I've been involved in the northern part of the parish forever. You know, I represented that area on the parish council, but even before that, I was lived there, and so I've been intrigued by what we call North Lafayette or Upper Lafayette or any of those terms. I was having lunch with a friend of mine who I've known since we were in first grade, and he asked me this question one day. He says, "Why is a north side the north side?"
Yeah.
And he wasn't talking about a compass point. He was talking about the socioeconomic issues that are associated with North Lafayette that are a little bit different than South Lafayette. And so I started thinking about it, and I couldn't answer his question right away. And so I started doing some research and digging into history and everything else. And eventually, I traced it back to the railroad, that when the railroad came in the late 1880s, it created what eventually became a barrier of sorts when the automobile became famous in the 1940s and 1950s. And as a result of that, that barrier made growth on the south side easier than on the north side, which also resulted in property values being lower on the north side than on the south side. And that has triggered a bunch of socioeconomic issues, things to happen. So from that question, why is the north side the north side, I found a lot of other interesting things. I was in the USL Library, Dupre Library one day, looking for information about that.
And there's not much. There's not too much written history from what I've learned.
Yeah, exactly. But in looking for it, I found a very, very small pamphlet. I mean, this pamphlet might have been 25 pages thick. And in it, it described how in the 1830s, there was a referendum that if the voters approved it, the parish would build five roads. And those roads would go from Lafayette to Abbeville, Lafayette to Crowley, Lafayette to Opelousas, Lafayette to New Iberia, Lafayette to St. Martinville.
Well, so like the spokes on a wheel.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So that was the root of our hub city, you know. Uh-huh. And for the longest time, all of the roads led to Lafayette, which again then triggered economic development and growth.
So that's people would come here for doctors, I guess, shopping.
Exactly.
The big town.
Well, yeah. And they came here for that, but then they also came here for, you know, the example I use in my presentation is if you lived in New Iberia in those days, but your cousin or whoever lived in Abbeville, what you would do is you'd come to Lafayette and then go to Abbeville. Mm-hmm. Because it was easier. There was a good road, you know, both ways, as opposed to trying to go cross country between New Iberia and Abbeville. So it brought traffic, it brought businesses, you know, restaurants and places to get food for the horses, because, you know, horse and buggies in those days. You know, so all of that. I mean,
that was a smart investment.
Yeah, so So each little discovery like that led to another discovery to where now I do about an hour and a half presentation, and I can't cover all of the information. In fact, usually what happens is when I make these presentations, somebody in the audience has a good story. And they come up to me afterwards and they say, "Lynn, you know, do you know why this happened, you know, or that happened?"
They have a family member that maybe shared something from the past.
And so the story the next time is expanded and it grows and it's But Jan, the most interesting thing to me about this is as I've discovered these things about things that happened 100 years ago, 200 years ago, or whatever, it's made me ask the question, what are we doing that somebody 100 years from now is going to look back and say, yeah.
Thank goodness, Lafayette.
Look at that. Yeah. Look at that. You know,
took the lead.
Who's the Maurice Hyman of Lafayette today? You know, who's the Ray Audemars of Lafayette today? You know, and you and I could name a few possible candidates, but you know, who's going to be remembered, or what is going to be remembered 100 and 200 years ago? What are our great grandkids going to talk about? You know, it's inspired me in my architecture to think about that. You know, when I'm designing a building, is that building for 5 years or 10 years? But what if it's for 100 years?
Right.
You know, how do I design it to where it'll have meaning then, you know? As you know, I was very, very involved in the Veterans Memorial project.
In Karen Crow. Yes, it's beautiful.
It's one of those projects where I didn't make very much money. I didn't make any money on it, but it's probably the most significant project of my career, you know, because I did not serve in the military. So this was my way of paying back, you know, to giving back to those guys and gals who did. I had an uncle who died in World War II. It was my way. I'd never met him. You know, he died before I was born. It was my way of saying thanks to him, you know. And that project, in my mind, will last. You know, I think it'll be here 100 years from now or hopefully longer. We're doing other projects in Karen Crow now. I've also been asked to do a Veterans Memorial in Scott and in Youngsville. What a great opportunity.
Honor.
You know, what a great opportunity to be to say thank you to those guys, but to also leave something that when I'm gone,
it'll be a legacy.
It'll be a legacy to my work as well, you know. So that presentation that I do has impacted me many, many ways and through my career as well as, you know, just knowing more about about our community.
I know when I heard your presentation, I was really getting involved in our community, and I was serving as an assistant city parish attorney for community development.
Right.
So I was very active in the community, and I had heard people use the term wildcatter mentality. And for those that are listening that may not be familiar, I mean, we have a lot of people here that they start businesses, they'll sell them for a lot of money during the bust in the past. Sometimes they'd make a lot of money, lose a lot of money, but people are willing to roll the dice here. I think Lafayette's different in that mentality. And so when I heard your presentation about how Lafayette leaders in the past had invested in their own city and got people to invest with their tax money, right, it wasn't just the roads you were talking about back in the 1830s that made us the hub city, but in the late, I guess it was in the late 1800s when Lafayette Utility System was established, that was also a leap. A lot of the small towns around Lafayette didn't have electricity for quite a while.
That happened in
that was an early development when Lafayette Utilities was
established. The vote was in 1897, and so the utility plant, which is now LUS, was built in 1899. By as an example, Scott, the city of Scott, got electricity in 1927.
I mean, think about that, 30 years.
Yeah, almost 30 years later.
Yeah.
And then the rural parts of the parish didn't get electricity until the 30s and 40s when the rural co-ops, like SLMCO.
Exactly.
SLMCO, it was a federally funded thing where companies
during the
like,
Depression, it was funded,
right,
to come in and help. And
it was
these
a way of bringing
communities.
Utilities to those areas where it really wasn't economically feasible to bring utilities.
Mm-hmm.
So the federal government subsidized companies like SLMCO and CLECO and Entergy or Gulf States in those days.
But you can see from that why they stayed rural. You know, you could farm on that type of land, but you couldn't really have the big development that a town with electricity would have. So it really puts our history and perspective.
But you raise a good point. There was a referendum. You know, people in Lafayette got to vote on whether they wanted to build an electricity plant. Now, I've got to ask myself, how did my great-grandfather understand anything about electricity? I mean, I have a hard time understanding about electricity today, but someone in those days was convinced some kind of
way. That was an act of faith that our money's going to be well spent.
We'll do something that will benefit you.
Right.
And as a result of that, many decisions were based on Lafayette getting something because we had electricity, including our university.
Mm-hmm.
At the time when the university was being founded, there were other cities under consideration. One was New Iberia and one was Scott and Lafayette. Lafayette got it, and the ultimate reason why Lafayette got it was because Lafayette had electricity. The other two cities did not.
Exactly.
And look at that. You know, look at how that has paid off for us tenfold, hundredfold.
Exponentially,
you know?
Yeah. And then looking ahead, what really sealed it for me about our community being progressive was the LUS Fiber Initiative.
Right.
Much as a catalyst as that was for discussion, because it wasn't, it was controversial.
Right.
The government
right.
would set up the fiber to the home. That was another act of
right.
leaping forward, trying to get our community to be ready to bring new business in and to help us diversify,
Absolutely.
Bring in these tech companies that
Absolutely.
We now enjoy.
Yeah, because again, when you say fiber to the home, I'm not really
what
sure
is that?
What that
yeah.
means.
But
know?
I like the way my internet works.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. How does it work?
I don't know. But when it doesn't work, I certainly know it's not working. You know,
exactly right.
Yeah. So your historical perspective, really, for me, and I know many others that have heard it, it helped me not only have pride in the community, but understand Lafayette's mode of operating. We really operate on a different level, I think, than a lot of our counterparts throughout the state.
Yeah, I think you're right. And you know, we still see it happening today. We still see, you know, one of the areas that I'm very interested in is the growth of the small towns.
Mm-hmm.
And I see, you know, especially Youngsville and Broussard, but Carrico and Scott really not far behind. The growth in those areas has been phenomenal. And again, large part to the leadership in those small towns, but it's all happening because of Lafayette. You know,
mm-hmm.
Lafayette is like the goose that lays the golden eggs. If it wasn't for Lafayette and the success that Lafayette has had, Carrico and Scott and Youngsville and Scott and Dusson would be just another small town. You know, they would be very much like, not to pick on Lorville or Gaydon, but you know, just another small town.
Right.
But because of Lafayette's growth, those cities have been able to grow, and I can throw in Brobridge, although it's not mm-hmm. in the parish. Brobridge, in many of the same ways, has been influenced by the growth of Lafayette, where they're somewhat bedroom communities, but at the same time, they're becoming economic engines on their own,
right.
just because of the growth that's happened there and the grocery stores, the businesses that are happening in those locations make it a destination.
Right. And I think for most people coming in, you know, we think of the small towns as being different, but I think people look at Lafayette when they come in, they're not making quite the distinction that
right.
we may as residents. You know,
right.
looking at the
right.
the lines between the cities, I
exactly.
think people look at Acadiana, Lafayette as a,
yes.
a collective region.
Yes.
You know,
yes. Yes.
And you talk about that in your history. I would like to get into that some, the growth patterns. If you would maybe give us a little synopsis of what you've looked at and how the growth actually is happening more outside of the
right.
city of Lafayette.
Right. Well, yes. You know, just in the last census, between the 2000 and 2010 census, the city of Lafayette grew about 10,000, by you know, the size of the population of the city of Lafayette grew by about 10,000 people. The overall parish grew by over 30,000, which tells me right there that two-thirds of the growth in this parish was not
right.
in the city of Lafayette. It was outside. It was in the small towns. You could look at Youngsville, and it's an unbelievably phenomenal story of growth, you know, where not too long ago, they were a small little village of 1,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
In the last census, I'm trying to remember, but they were around 7,000 or 8,000. And from what I've been seeing and following some of their building permits and everything else, I think by 2020, they're going to be approaching 20,000 people. That is not a small town anymore.
No.
That is a pretty significant, I mean, you know, that's considerably larger than mm-hmm. what Lafayette was 100 years ago. And so if you keep projecting that growth for Youngsville and Broussard and Carrico and Scott, I see where those small towns will continue to grow. They will be the growth areas for Lafayette Parish mm-hmm. in the future. I also see a big move for downtown Lafayette to grow.
Hopefully,
yes,
you know, more
exactly,
homes, apartments.
Exactly, to grow
yeah.
up.
Uh-huh.
You know, we need to be smarter with the way we've grown in the past. You know, we've continued to run our infrastructure further and further away at the expense of the taxpayers. And we need to get smart and build where the infrastructure mm-hmm. already is. And downtown Lafayette is a perfect example of that. You know,
right.
we need to grow up, as you just mentioned, grow vertically so that, you know, we can make use of the infrastructure that's already here. I often have the concern for the small towns, the downtowns in the small towns. What we saw happen to downtown Lafayette in the 60s and 70s was a migration toward the suburbs, and as a result, downtown Lafayette suffered. Mm-hmm. It almost became blighted in some areas. And it took a lot of work and a lot of money to rebuild and to get downtown Lafayette strong again. And it's still work to be done, but it's much stronger than it was, let's say, 20 years ago. I'm seeing some of the same thing happening in the small towns right now, where downtown Carencro has lost a bunch of businesses. A lot of the nice old buildings in downtown Carencro have been torn down and removed. And we see the edge of Carencro growing, the suburbs, the big grocery stores, all of those kinds of businesses. But no one coming back to, I shouldn't say no one, because we do have a few good examples, but very little happening in the downtowns of those small towns. And so, it's a good time to be able to try to arrest that and turn it around and bring value back into the downtowns of those small communities, because I think that is where the growth will happen. And without a downtown, I think the little communities are not as rich as they could be. Not rich in the sense of quality of life.
Right. I really believe that millennials and much younger generations are going to be the ones that bring back the life to downtown and all these towns you're talking about.
Yes.
Because people, from what I'm seeing, they see the convenience. Why would you want to commute when you could live right by where you work? I mean, ride your bike to work or be able to walk to work or just have one vehicle.
Kids ride their bikes to school.
I really believe that our younger generation, the millennials, are going to be the ones that are the catalyst for demanding more housing and making it happen. So hopefully in Carencro and the small towns like you're talking about, that same resurgence will happen.
And
maybe they can correct some of the mistakes we were making with the urban sprawl that we've experienced.
I think it's starting to happen, but it'll take a generation.
Right. Well, do you have any tidbits, like your favorite places you like in Lafayette Parish, or anything that's, something you could recommend to people if they were coming into Lafayette?
My favorite, up until recently, my favorite place, my favorite building in the world was St. John's Cathedral.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
And I went to school next door at what was known as Cathedral at the time. It's Cathedral Carmel now. And so I kind of grew up in that church, and I still don't go there every weekend, but we do go there very often because, just like the building inspires me. It just feels sacred. It feels like, there's a connection to another world there, and it's a very, very special building. And I often look back at buildings like that are so old and ask myself, how did they build that in those days? How did they build that in 19-something, the early 1900s? Because they didn't have power saws and power lifts and power this and power that. They just had probably handmade, site-made scaffolding and look at it. It's a magnificent building. Mm-hmm. That if we try to build today, it would really be a challenge. So that's one of the buildings I always tell people, whether you're Catholic or not, you really should visit St. John's Cathedral, because right next door is the oak, the St. John Oak, which is, in my opinion, some of God's best work.
Yeah.
And so some of God's best work right next to man's best work. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's quite a nice.
Right by downtown on St. John.
Absolutely. Yeah, so close to downtown. So I often bring people there when we have visitors from out of town, regardless of their religion or what, and that's a real special place. That's the one that comes to mind right now. Mm-hmm. My wife and I recently just in the past month got back from a trip of a lifetime to Paris, and so we saw some buildings there that replaced St. John's Cathedral on my number one list. But really, for a lot of the same reasons, to see a 600-year-old cathedral that was built, by manpower, not by electricity, not by power tools,
and survived World War II.
Yeah,
I mean, it's just amazing.
Yeah, really amazing. Yeah. Really amazing.
Right.
So that was a really special trip for this young architect. 50 years ago, I was sitting in art history classes and architecture history classes and looking at slides of a lot of the buildings that I recently visited and thinking, man, I'd love to go there someday.
And you got to.
That day finally came.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've been so lucky to have you as a guest.
Thank you.
Our guest today has been Lynn Guidry, a local architect. How can people find out more about you? I know you have a fascinating Facebook page.
Facebook is probably the best way.
Lynn Guidry.
Lynn Guidry or Lynn Guidry Architect. I have uh-huh. two Facebook pages, but that's probably the thing that I keep up the most. I also have a website, but I haven't worked on it and I haven't kept it up. So Facebook is probably the best way.
It's the best way. I want to thank you, Lynn, for you've done for Lafayette, not only your public service and your goodwill, but the architectural gems that you've designed for us. It's been a real pleasure getting to know you over the years, and I want to thank you for your time.
Thank you, Jim.
I also want to thank AOC Community Media. We've been taping in the studio today, their new podcast facility, and I'm grateful to all the help that AOC Community Media is giving this podcast. I'm Jan Swift. This is a new podcast called Discover Lafayette. You can find us on Facebook at Discover Lafayette, and we're working on our website, which will be at discoverlafayette.net. I'm Jan Swift with another episode of Discover Lafayette. Thank you for listening.
The views and opinions expressed on this or any program on the AOC Podcast Network do not reflect the views and opinions of Lafayette Consolidated Government, Cox Communications, LUS Fiber, AOC Community Media, its Board of Directors, or its staff. To learn more about becoming a community media producer, visit us on the web at aocinc.org.